So let's start at the beginning. Where were you raised?
I was born in Louisville, Kentucky, and lived there for about the first 11 years of my life.
Now, would you say that you were in a geeky or tech-heavy household environment?
No, not even a little bit. My mom even today complains she doesn't know how to load her own stapler.
So are you her stapler IT guy?
I am definitely the stapler IT guy, yeah. One thing I knew for sure is I was interested in computers, and one of the options at the UW was this ability to combine different classes from different schools at the university into a single degree that they didn't offer. So mine was computer sales and marketing.
So it was a very unique thing that you did here.
The only one I know with that on their transcript.
It puts you out there almost as a visionary, especially when you look to where your career landed you. Dead on.
Yeah. I'm one of the few people I know whose job 20 years later is actually what they got their degree in.
So you graduate college, you graduate the UW with a degree in computer sales and marketing, and then what?
Back in the 80s, Microsoft wasn't quite the powerhouse they were today, and I was thinking more in terms of like mainframes and bigger systems. Mm-hmm. And IBM was reputed to be sort of the king of sales and marketing, so I wanted to cut my teeth with a company that really had a reputation like that.
Mm-hmm. And so did you land that job?
I did not land that job.
And what was the first job you had here full-time?
So in 95, I started in SQL Server, and I was hired to help market and launch SQL Server 6.5.
Okay, now you say that you're not too a technical guy. You're launching SQL Server.
Yeah.
I have a hard time understanding it. So I think you're not giving yourself enough credit, perhaps.
Yeah, that was funny. It was interesting even to me back then, because I certainly don't have a ton of database experience. I had a bit through college, that degree.
Mm-hmm.
But the challenges and the reason they hired me for SQL at the time were less about the database and more about how do you really gain sort of customer momentum and reach for the product, and I had more experience with that.
So what I'm hoping on is that this presentation sort of enables you to think about what the business opportunities are around SQL Server.
What were some of the obstacles? Can you remember?
We were really seen as not enterprise ready, not scalable, not easy to develop applications for, and so it was really breaking through that enterprise and customer perception that SQL Server was ready to play.
How did you overcome that?
Yeah, a lot of it was getting early customer testimonials and getting them excited about the product. We spent a large amount of time and effort building a program on getting database administrators up to speed on the product, so we sort of worked from a ground-up perspective, getting people excited about the product, and that helped us get in the door.
I will do our best to get us back on time. What that means is you're not allowed to ask me any questions or disagree with anything I have to say.
And then I think the other thing was that Windows Server was really gaining momentum at the time as well, so we sort of latched on to all the Windows Server marketing efforts and rode their coattails into the enterprise.
I mean, because SQL Server has now gone on to be incredibly successful.
Yeah, it's so really cool to see.
You can take credit?
I like to say I was part of the team.
Okay.
Part of the team.
Okay, so from SQL Server, you launched 7.0 successfully. Did you decide to then switch over into a different job, or what happened?
Yeah, so, friend of a friend, same kind of thing. I think the way a lot of people move around Microsoft is that somebody I'd worked with on that project came and started talking about some new areas Microsoft was thinking about in terms of marketing and thought I might be a good fit for the team.
Mm-hmm.
It sounded interesting. It was not your sort of atypical, traditional block and tackle product marketing, and so I decided to try something new.
What was it?
Well, it was really the first time I think that we were starting to realize that we needed to market solutions to audiences instead of just products and feature sets. And the group I joined was all about how to market to the BDM, or the business decision maker.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we build content and relationships with sort of senior level or even CXOs within sort of the Fortune 2000?
The goal then, getting them to adopt our operating system or...
Yes to all of it.
Yes to everything,
yeah.
Microsoft.
That just builds on the momentum of our .NET platform, an initiative we've been speaking about for some time now that takes all of these different solutions and combines them with devices and storage so that you get the information and the tools that you need.
One thing, we've been able to put our products on a lot of desktops, but being able to go in and talk to the CEO of a Fortune 500 company about why Microsoft should be your partner all up was something we weren't really well versed in at the time.
Right. Okay, now I know at some point you had a neighbor who you felt had one of the coolest jobs at Microsoft,
yeah,
right?
He
was working, Jonathan Klutz, and actually I've worked with him before, doing the Microsoft Home of the Future, right?
Yep. So John lives across the street. He runs the Home of the Future, which is sort of this great environment that you can go in and see a 5 to 10 year vision of what your house might look like, mm-hmm. and how all the technology pulls together to make your life easier. and clearly one of the coolest jobs on campus. Very visionary, and you get to think about and play with a lot of new and interesting
ideas.
Yeah,
and they've got that showcase down at Disneyland.
They do have it at Disneyland. So at the time, I was doing a different job looking at marketing different sort of aspects of productivity to information workers. Mm-hmm. And I had heard rumor that Jeff Rakes had recently toured the home and found it odd that we weren't doing a similar sort of envisionary sort of exhibit for customers around productivity.
Totally.
Because we hear from customers that, you know, they really want to know what we're thinking 3 to 5, even 10 years out with regards to office and related products. Sounded cool, and I sort of knew what John was doing and loved that idea of the business, so I did my very best to sort of insert myself into that V-team and get involved with that project.
Okay.
And at some point, it became very clear to me that they would need somebody full-time to run it instead of a bunch of people who
somebody.
Had days. Somebody.
You wrote the job description.
I basically wrote the job description. And then I had to apply through the job description by coming in through the tool.
That's
and
funny.
Putting my name on it. And then the best part was an HR rep called me one day and said, do you have any questions about the job?
That's what led you to the Center for Information Work.
Correct, yeah.
Talk to me about that.
Our goal was to showcase in a real environment to our sort of top enterprise customers what the future of productivity could look like for their employees.
So would you call this Office of the Future rather than Home of the Future?
Yeah, exactly. The code name, in fact, was Office of the Future.
So I nailed it.
There, you got it. I always say it's sort of Office meets Star Trek.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is it something people can visit?
Yeah. We actually put you into the scenario where you role play mm-hmm. Workers in 5 to 10 years. You're using technology to solve problems, new gadgets and new display devices and things to get something done.
And what sort of new gadgets and devices and productivity tools are on display there?
We kind of push the boundaries from anything from mobile devices and how to be a mobile worker to touch surfaces and how things that may look inanimate actually can be activated and used sort of as input devices.
Mm-hmm. You really have to have your finger on the pulse of what everyone's working on.
That was really the best part. You not only kind of monitored trends in the industry and what kind of cool technologies were being conceived and developed, but, you know, we would go across all the divisions in the company from Word to Windows, a lot of time in MSR, Microsoft Research, mm-hmm. and just try to understand what people were thinking about. Over the years of doing that job, Office Labs was conceived under Jeff Rakes, and my team was rolled up under Office Labs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
All coming together all now.
All pulled together,
and
yeah.
Your job was to really head up that center, correct?
That center, correct.
And what was people's general reaction?
You know, 99.9% of the time, you got just sort of bug-eyed, wow, this is really cool. A lot of people wanted to understand what the progression was between the software we had today and what the vision looked like, which was great because that's what we were trying to do is tie those together. But generally, people all walked out thinking, you know, that was really neat, and I heard probably, you know, 100 times, can I have that today?
So. And the answer is no.
Not a chance.
And what did you move on to?
So I work in a group at Microsoft called Marketing at Microsoft, and we're a professional development team that is responsible for looking across the entire company's population of marketers. It's about 7,800. Mm-hmm. And our job is to think sort of holistically about the individual and how to make them better at their jobs, as well as organizationally. So we go into, you know, the marketing vice presidents of an organization and work with them and figure out the best ways to sort of up-level or upskill their team in terms of marketing.
So do you do training?
One of the things that we might offer is training. We do a lot of partnerships with Kellogg, the business school out of Chicago. So we offer training on everything from digital marketing to value proposition. Mm-hmm. But we do everything from leadership coaching to managing the health of the marketers across the multiple disciplines within the marketing profession. We work very closely with HR to make sure that career guidance and our mm-hmm. HR tools are in line with what marketers need, et cetera.
How techie are you, would you say? Let's talk. Do you Twitter?
I do Twitter.
You do?
I am part of the Twitterati. Just heard that.
Right.
Yeah. And I have 39 followers.
You do?
Yeah, I think that makes me pretty much pathetic when it comes to Twitter.
And are you raising your children to be little techie kids as well?
You know, it's funny. I don't know if they're...
Are they tweeting?
They're not tweeting.
Okay.
My daughter was texting far more than any of us realized, and so we've kind of tried to curb that a bit.
Well, she's 16?
She's going on 16.
That's ripe age for texting.
I know. Something like 7,000 a month was the current number, and apparently that's not a lot.
So I think I might match that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What the future likely brings to the generations to come is technology is just completely pervasive. There's not a question of whether I'm connected or not, mm-hmm. or where my data is located, whether my data is work content or pictures and videos and music.
It's all in the cloud.
It's all there, right? And I mean, you know, and the funny thing is, I think that's a good example. Today we think about it as a cloud service, but you know, 10, 20 years, you won't even think of the cloud anymore. Data will just be everywhere. And yep. as an individual, or the way I hope my kids or their kids grow up, is that they just have this sort of great ubiquitous access to things when they want it. And it's easy. Things just work all the time. You know, you don't have this sort of confusion between devices and where I have things and when I use them.
Everything integrates smoothly
Everything
together.
Everything is there, yeah.
Always connected, always online.
Always connected. I think that's messaging, isn't it?
You would know.
Well, I might, yeah.
All right, and the final question. Jetsons or Flintstones?
Oh, clearly Jetsons.
There it is.
Yeah.
Tom Gruber, thank you very much.
You're welcome.